Attempt blocked by McNabb. To the right circle, a try. Kick, save Hill. Rebound, another try, save Hill. A third try, save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Bois boots it ahead, sticks it left. Barbashev in, back to the right, a shot. Score! Marchessault, 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Tuesday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. A busy day for the Vegas Golden Knights, coming off the heels of a five-game road trip in which they only pull three out of a possible 10 points. Kelly McCrimmon gets to work and makes a trade. Anthony Mantha in from the Washington Capitals. $5.7 million cap hit reduced to $2.85 million, and it only cost the Golden Knights a 2024 second-round pick and a 2026 fourth-round pick. So we've kind of given our initial assessments of the trade. Obviously, we like the player. Mantha, again, is he can drive play 5-on-5. The shooting percentage this year has been phenomenal, 22%. He's got 20 goals so far for the Washington Capitals. He comes over in the midst of a career type of year from a goal-scoring perspective. Seems to have rediscovered that scoring touch that he was, you know, really coveted for a couple of years ago by the Washington Capitals. He can skate. He can go to the front of the net. He's a big frame, but not overly physical. Good defensive impacts. Like, all the things you'd like to see in a winger, you have there in Anthony Mantha. Chapman, you've gotten to sit with this now for a little over an hour or so, understanding the full trade. If you were to throw an initial grade on it, where are you?
Well, I think when you factor in the retained salary, I really, really like it. I think it's an A. Like, I mean, it's the fact that I've seen what people on Twitter are saying, and not that they should influence anything one way or another, but like impartial observers from other teams, like Ranger fans, are really upset that the Golden Knights made this deal, because I think Mantha was a guy that Rangers were maybe looking at. I think when you look at the disappointment from fan bases of other teams that the Golden Knights were able to make this deal, and then when you factor in they gave up a second, like I said earlier, I don't really care about the fourth. To me, they gave up a second to get a 20-goal scorer who they're only paying $2.8 million against the salary cap. I don't know how you can't love this trade. Like, I think it's – I think, and this is maybe hot take because it's still fresh in my mind, I think it's one of the best trades they've made ever. Like, when you factor, I mean, I don't think Mantha's the best player they've ever acquired, but when you factor in what they gave up,
it's a really good trade, but it's not
Jack Eichel.
It's not where I was even going.
Okay.
Mark Stone is still the best trade that the Golden Knights have ever made.
I said one of the best. I didn't say the best.
Okay. The Mark Stone trade was one of the best. Chandler Stephenson, one of the best.
Nick Waugh.
It's hard to argue, right? Like, all the trades, more or less, have worked out for the Golden Knights. Like, there have been a couple, maybe, that you look at. Tomáš Tatar, one that just didn't quite pan out for this team. But by and large, like you mentioned, Nick Waugh, trade, huge, huge player for this team. Chandler Stephenson, trade, big performer for this team. Mark Stone, it's your captain, it's your leader. He helps deliver a Stanley Cup. Jack Eichel helps deliver a Stanley Cup. Ivan Barbashev helps deliver a Stanley Cup. Like, the Golden Knights have gotten a lot of business done via trade, and it has really built the team to where they are right now. This is another one of those trades where, again, you get a player that can help you right now. You get a player that addresses a need that you had even when everybody was still fully healthy, and it gives you the opportunity and the flexibility to do more. It's an amazing trade for the Golden Knights.
Yeah, there's no other way to look at it. I mean, it's phenomenal from a lot of different aspects. It fills a need. It gives you more depth. It allows you, it adds another presence on the power play. You know, it was a relatively inexpensive move. Like, and I think ultimately what we may look back and grade this when it's all said and done, we may look back and grade the trade based on what the next move is. Because if it allows them to go out and get another really good player, this trade was kind of the precursor for them being able to do that. And it gave them the flexibility to be able to go out and get that other player.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And that's going to be the other aspect of this is if the Golden Knights do more, then it's not just a second and a fourth round pick for 50% of Anthony Manta. It is a second and a fourth for 50% of Anthony Manta and whatever else you're able to do because you got that flexibility built in. It's phenomenal stuff. I dig it. I'm a fan. And so it leads us to a larger conversation when it comes to where Anthony Manta fits right now, right? Because for the Golden Knights, you're still dealing with injuries. We don't have a status update yet on Will Carrier or Brett Howden or Pavel Dorofeev. Those are kind of the three NHL forwards that you would expect at some point could potentially play for the Golden Knights this season. I don't know if any of the three are close to a return. So it gives you kind of an idea of, again, what the Golden Knights are up against. Mark Stone's going to be out long-term, obviously. So when you look at the Golden Knights and what they have right now, there's a couple of different ways that you can approach this, right? You can look to create some different looks with Jack Eichel playing with away from Barbashev and Marchessault. You can look at different looks in which you get all four of your centers playing down the middle, meaning you have a line for Eichel, a line for Carlson, a line for Stevenson, and a line for Waugh. Or you can kind of mix and match different aspects or go with status quo. If it were up to you, Chapman, how would you run the lines out for Bruce Cassidy on Thursday if you do not get any healthier, meaning Carrier can't go, Howden can't go, Dorofiev's not an option, and you do have Anthony Manta to work with?
Well, I'm not touching my first line. I'm leaving Eichel, Barbashev, and Marchessault as is. Mm-hmm. I'm not touching that at all. The second line, it gets a little bit, I think, where you have some flexibility. I will say this.
Sure.
I might bring Brendan Brisson back up and play him with Carlson and Michael Amadio. I think I like what I've seen from Brisson lately. He's shown that he's getting closer to being a full-time NHL player, and I think he's shown that he's in the right spots. He's just got to put the puck in the net. Third line, it gets a little bit interesting because I think Carlson, Brisson, and Amadio is where I would go for the second line. The third line, I'm going to put Chandler Stephenson at the center. I'm going to play him with Paul Cotter, and I'm going to play him with Anthony Manta. I love the speed on that line. Like, the idea that Chandler Stephenson might be the slowest guy of the three is pretty incredible, because for a big guy, Anthony Manta can move. Like, he can get up and down the ice. So it's a speed line, and it's a line that has the ability to score some goals. Like, that third line depth, having a 20-goal scorer on your third line, it's huge. And the fourth line, I really like what I've seen from Mason Morelli. Like, I think the way he's playing, you keep him in the lineup until you have you don't have the option to keep him in the lineup, because he plays hard. The goal he scored last night was a really tough goal. It was a guy who he scored that goal on grit and determination. He wants to play in the NHL, and I think he's taking advantage of his opportunity. I would have Nick Waugh center that line and have Keegan Kolasar on the right side, and you have two-thirds of your fourth line, and I think Morelli has shown that he's got the ability to play. I think he's got the ability to play on that fourth line role. So I think I'm going to keep him there.
So there's a couple of ways that I think I would look at this. Is do you want Brendan Brisson in the lineup or not? Right? And that kind of is one aspect that you have to consider. The other one is, do you want Chandler Stephenson down the middle or playing the wing?
I want him down the middle.
If you want Stephenson, If you want him down the middle, then I think you have to look at Brendan Brisson. Like, legitimately, I do.
Yeah.
Unless, again, you get healthy or you make another trade. But I think if you want Chandler Stephenson down the middle, you have to have another option that you bring up that is a top six winger for this team. Brendan Brisson fits that bill, even though it's been up and down for him, right? Like, we know it's been up and down for Brisson. Now, that being said, if you decide you want Stephenson down the middle, then I think you go with Barbashev, Eichel, Marchessault. I think you go with Brisson, Carlson, and Amadio. Those two players can certainly protect the aspects of Brendan's game that are still green. You have Cotter, Stephenson, Mantha. That line is big, and it can motor. I like that, and I have no issue with Mason Morelli, Nick Waugh, and Keegan Kolasar. That should hopefully give you advantage down your lineup as well. Now, the other aspect of this, too, that I think is really interesting is you can look at it and take Jack away from Barbashev and Marchessault and put Nick Waugh back into that spot, which I think is something that certainly should be on the table given the injuries that the Golden Knights still have. So there's a couple of ways that you could do that, right? Obviously, you can have a line of Paul Cotter, Jack Eichel, Anthony Mantha if you really want to get heavy and fast. You can go Stephenson, Eichel, and Mantha certainly at the top of your lineup, but then you would have Waugh with Barbashev and Marchessault, and then you could interchange Cotter and Stephenson with either Eichel and Mantha or with Carlson and Amadio, and then you keep, again, Morelli, Fraze, and Kolasar together. Like, that's an aspect, a direction you can go. And then the other one is really simple, right? Like, you just go straight up what you're used to. You've got Barbashev with Eichel and Marchessault. You have Stephenson with Carlson and Amadio. And then you've got Cotter with Waugh and Mantha. Like, that right there could be what the Golden Knights go with. It's as few moving parts as possible, but there's certainly options available. And I think that's going to be the big thing for Bruce Cassidy is how many different configurations do you work through? What else is coming? And how does that make you a better team moving forward? How long does it take to find those right combinations?
Well, I think a large part of this is, where do you want Anthony Mantha to play? Do you want him to play on your second line, or do you want him to play on your third line? I like the idea.
I think ideally
you have him on the third
ideally,
line.
I think ideally you want him to be a third line winger for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially down the road if, and again, it's an if, Mark Stone's healthy.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, that changes the dynamics of everything. But we now know that Mark Stone, based on the fact that the Golden Knights have acquired salary, I think it's pretty safe to say that if Mark Stone does come back, he's not coming back into the playoffs.
I think that that's obviously a fair assessment. If you assumed Mark was coming back before the end of the regular season, you wouldn't be spending the money.
Exactly. So, I think that you know, at least for the time being, the most important thing is finding your game going into the playoffs, and you're going to have to do that without Mark Stone. So I think it gives Bruce Cassidy a lot of options because first of all, you've got four capable centers and five, if you include Stephenson. I'm going to say Byron Fraze is out of the mix for now, but you do have center depth. I think there's a lot of flexibility, and ultimately it depends on, you'd probably want Mantha on the third line, but who do you want anchoring that third line? Do you want William Carlson anchoring it? Do you want Chandler Stephenson, or do you want Nick Waugh? So I think for now, I'm going to assume that Stephenson is going to line up at third line center. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's a lot of options for Bruce and this team.
Yeah, part of me feels like in a perfect world, you see if Mantha can play the left side. And if he can, like, again, everyone's healthy, all things being equal. If you're able to go Mantha, Carlson, Amadio,
I like that.
I think that's a really solid third line.
I like that.
You can go out there. They can shut things down. They can still produce and score. The way Carlson's been playing, like, that can be a really nice shutdown line for you. And that is assuming that you go back to Nick Waugh with Will Carrier and Keegan Kolasar as your fourth line. And if you get healthy, you're not you're not going away from Mark Stone and Chandler Stephenson as a duo. You're just not.
Well, and the other aspect is, I think we have to assume that at least as of today, that Brendan Brisson is not in the plan.
Well, I don't think that he was ever going to be in the plan for the postseason.
No, no, I mean as of today for Thursday.
Yeah, I'm torn on this. Like I really am, because again, one of the things Bruce Cassidy has not had available to him until yesterday was all
Eichel.
Four centers back in the lineup, right? Like and even with Jack in the lineup at various stretches, like you've had centers out. You had William Karlsson out. You had Brett Howden playing in different spots. Like it has not been stable from the middle of the ice for the Golden Knights this season. That's been an aspect of why they have not been able to gain traction. So if you're Bruce and you're looking at it and what you want come playoff time is Jack, Chandler, William, and Nick Waugh down the middle, then maybe you start building your lines that way. And so if that's the case and you want a player alongside William Karlsson and Michael Amadio that can score for you or that gives you more of that top six feel or look as a placeholder for either Pavel Dorofeev or, you know, another player that's going to get healthy or a player that you might acquire on Friday, then I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to play Brendan Brisson one more game in that spot.
That's my thought process as well. But let me ask you, looking in the crystal ball in the future, so William Carrier comes back, and you've got your fourth line back in tow with Waugh, Carrier, and Kolesar. Mm-hmm. But when Brett Howden comes back, where does he fit in this?
I don't know. I mean, you can look at it from a couple of different perspectives, right? Like, if you have Karlsson and Amadio as a thing, and you still don't have Mark Stone available to you, then maybe Anthony Mantha takes the slot with Mark Stone. So you've got Mantha alongside Stephenson and Cotter, and then you've got Brett Howden with Karlsson and Amadio.
Because I think Karlsson and Amadio, I think Amadio plays best when he's next to William Karlsson.
We often talk about these things in pairs, right?
Yes.
And I think the duo, the pair that Bruce Cassidy has the most confidence in when it comes to William Karlsson is Karlsson alongside Amadio.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
And look, I think Michael Amadio, he's certainly a guy who has a knack to find ways to score goals. But I think you've got your trio, because I don't think you break up Barbashev, Eichel, and Marcia. So I think the three of them just play so well together. They really complement each other's game.
Just devil's advocate here.
Okay.
We were 2.5-3 weeks ago talking about how Nick Waugh had come into that spot. Those three guys were on an absolute tear, and they at least deserved a chance to keep things going when Jack got back.
Is the pair Barbashev and Marchessault and not Eichel and one of those two guys?
See, I don't know. That's a really good question, right? Like, to me, do you give Jack a couple of games with Mantha? Right? Like, do you give Jack a couple of games with Anthony Mantha? Maybe you go Barbashev, Eichel, Mantha, or something like that. Or you just go a little bit kind of crazy with it. You go Chandler Stephenson, Jack Eichel, Anthony Mantha. That's a lot of speed. It's a lot of skill. It's a high IQ line. And then you just go with Barbashev, Waugh, and Marchessault as your tried and true. You know what you're going to get night
in
and night out with that line.
Make them your number two line.
And see if you can build something with Jack away from Marchessault and Barbashev.
I kind of like the way you're thinking here, because if you can go with Mantha, Eichel, and Stephenson, and then you can go with Waugh, Marchessault, and Barbashev, that gives you a third line of Paul Cotter, William Karlsson, Michael Amadio.
Yep.
It's not a bad line.
No, it really isn't. So I don't know what direction Bruce Cassidy is going to go. Obviously, we'll get some context clues tomorrow morning with the Golden Knights get into practice. Maybe not all the context clues we're looking for. Again, we're not sure when Anthony Mantha will be here in Vegas or you know if he's on the ice tomorrow and practicing. That's pretty good observation that he might play on Thursday, which would be huge for the Vegas Golden Knights. So we'll keep an eye on that certainly tomorrow morning during practice as the Golden Knights get ready to turn the page on a five-game road trip and play the Vancouver Canucks on Thursday. Okay, Chapman, it's a hard pivot here. I don't want to do it, but we have to. We've been teasing it all day. We've got two game ratings to get into, the 7-2 loss to the Buffalo Sabres, the 6-3 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. So cue the music. Let's get into it, the game ratings.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Okay, so I don't know about you, but it's the same rating for me for both games. Are you kind of in the same boat there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's zero doubt on my mind.
All right, so we don't have to do it individually. We don't have to break them down individually. We can just give a collective game rating for both the 7-2 loss to Buffalo and the 6-3 loss to Columbus. So, Chris Chapman, the floor is yours. What is your game rating?
Well, they're both fireballs for me. Look, I don't care that what it boils down to me is the Golden Knights never led in any of those games. In fact, when you factor in the Boston game as well, they never led in that game. So they've been playing catch-up. They haven't started on time. They've been playing catch-up to bad teams, Buffalo and last night Columbus. Columbus hadn't won back-to-back games since Thanksgiving. Like, that's a lifetime ago in this league. And to get beat by that team, not only that team, but that team with a backup goalie, not good. Not good at all. So they're both pretty bad for me. You give up a ton of goals you had a guy in Alexander Nylander who spent most of the season in the AHL. He scores a hat trick against you. I know one was an empty net goal, but still. And I'm not knocking the guy, but the guy was in the AHL just a few weeks ago, and he comes into the league and he scores a hat trick against the defending cup champs. They're both fireballs for me. Bad games. Let's throw the videotape out because there's really nothing to gain from it. You burn them. And you start fresh on Thursday, and hopefully you're able to bounce back against the first-place Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, it's a fireball for me, too, for most of the reasons that you indicated, right? You don't have a lead in either of the games. And I think the thing that bothered me the most is that you got them back to even both times, right? Like, quick succession, scoring from the Golden Knights eliminated those early deficits. It was a little bit later in the game in Buffalo than it was in Columbus, but you had moments in both of those games after starting poorly where it was all tied up and the next goal could swing momentum in your favor, and they just couldn't make the play. They couldn't find the save. They couldn't make the play. And so it's one thing to say that you're always chasing the game. It's another thing to have opportunities after you've battled back to get your lead, to establish your identity, to take the game over, and they didn't do it. And so when those types of situations happen, it's great you battled back. And to a similar degree, it's what happened in Boston as well. But you have to be able to make plays once you get the game back in your grasp, and the Golden Knights of late have had an inability to do that. It cost them points on this road trip. It cost them points in the standings, and now things just feel a little bit more uncomfortable. So again, fireball for me, 1 out of 5. I'm with you in that regard. And for the Golden Knights, it's back to the drawing board Thursday as they take on the Vancouver Canucks. But before we go, I do want to give someone an opportunity to win a pair of tickets. That's right. We got a pair of tickets to Vegas and Detroit. That game coming up on Saturday. Caller number 9, 702-876-1340. You're a winner. One-timers are next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner. Centered one-timer score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Pad. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Got a lot of news to get to. Perhaps the most important bit of business today, Chapman. Ivan has signed a 2-year entry-level contract with the Colorado Avalanche. Thoughts on that one?
Well, great name.
Yeah.
I mean, good.
That's
for,
it. That's all you got to say.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know a whole lot about his game, but I know he's got a great name. Mm-hmm. Like, he's on the all-name team. What was the kid from Calgary? Dusty
Nickel.
Dusty Nickel. Another yes. member of the all-name team. But Ivan?
Yeah.
That's pretty damn cool. That's a good name.
Anytime I get to talk about Ivan, I go for it. Like, any opportunity I get, I'm going to take for sure. So, Ivan. Okay, let's get into, like, the meat and potatoes of one-timers. Lindy Ruff has been relieved of his duties as the head coach of the New Jersey Devils. Travis Green takes over for Lindy Ruff. The Devils are... middling is probably the nice way to say it, right? Like, they are a team that made the playoffs last year that everyone expected a lot out of this season. And currently, they are pretty far out of the playoffs. Tampa Bay, Detroit, they're the two wild card teams with 72 points on the year. New Jersey, 64 points, a couple of games in hand on Tampa Bay. So there is an outside chance that they get there. But to me, this one feels like it's 2 or 3 weeks too late. What say you?
Well, I don't know how much you blame Lindy Ruff for the fact that the New Jersey Devils don't have a goalie. Like, if they were going to do something, they should have done something weeks ago and gotten Lindy Ruff a goalie. Look, obviously, they've been snake-bitten by injuries, much like the Golden Knights have. Unfortunately for New Jersey, they don't have the leadership in the locker room that the Golden Knights have or the experience. They've got a lot of young guys. Losing Dougie Hamilton was huge. He's been out for longer than Shea Theodore has, it seems like. Jack Hughes has had multiple stints on the injured list. They were without Jonas Siegenthaler for a bit. I think not re-signing Damon Severson was probably a poor decision. So there's a...
Okay, so let me just ask the question.
What I'm saying is I don't blame Lindy Ruff. Okay. I know the question you're going to ask. I blame Tom Fitzgerald.
Okay, so there's a couple of things, right? Like, I feel like... if you were going to move on from Lindy Ruff after last season made the most sense. And, like, listen, I know the Devils made the playoffs. I know they won a round in the playoffs. I know you felt sky high with Lindy Ruff as your man. But if you felt like that was as far as he could take that team, which, I'll be honest, that's kind of where I fell with that idea, then you move on then. You find a different coach then.
Well, they had the coach.
Well, here's and Andrew Brunette.
Yes.
Is who you're talking about. Uh-huh. Okay. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. But as much as you can look at this and say it's coaching, they don't have a goalie.
Yeah.
They haven't had a goalie for 3 years. They do not have an NHL caliber goaltender that can actually do what you need to do. They don't even have a league average goaltender, Chapman.
No,
and I've made this argument.
One of the worst teams in the league in that department.
I have made this argument time and time and time again on this program. You give New Jersey league average goaltending. I'm not even talking about elite. I'm not even talking about good. I'm talking about average, and they are comfortably in a playoff spot right now.
They
comfortably.
Really,
that's with the injuries to Dougie Hamilton, with the injuries that they've dealt with all season long. If you give them average goaltending, they're in the playoffs.
I was banging the drum last summer before the guy signed an extension that they give up the farm for Connor Hellebuck. They didn't do that. Hellebuck, still one of the best goalies in the league. You didn't even have to give up the farm to get a decent goalie. They could have gone out and tried to get Jonathan Gibson. They could have gone and gotten Elvis Merzlikins. They could have gone to Boston and tried to get one of their goalies, Ullmarker Swayman.
They were in on Jacob Markstrom.
And then that fell. Like, we don't know what parameters made it fall apart. But when that fell apart, they should have had a backup plan. And I think for the most part, Tom Fitzgerald has done a pretty decent job. But he really dropped the ball here, Ryan. And Lindy being a scapegoat, I think it's a bit unfair because you brought him back and he was a Jack Adams finalist last year. He signed an extension along like Todd McClellan.
Sure.
It just goes to show that it's a tough business and it's a thankless business. And at some point, you're going to fall on the sword for a general manager.
Okay, here's my take on it. I believe the New Jersey Devils believe they're going to get Jacob Markstrom. Whether it be this week, whether it be the offseason, I believe the New Jersey Devils, in their minds, Tom Fitzgerald, in his mind, Jacob Markstrom is going to be their goaltender. Now, the fact that the Calgary Flames are 6-4-0 in their last 10 games and were on a bit of a heater probably is one of the main reasons that that deal falls apart. But if New Jersey can turn the corner and get a goaltender at this deadline, because they have to do it, if you're making this decision now, it's because you feel like you can still make the playoffs. And if that's the case, if you're Tom Fitzgerald, you have to give your team something in the way of a goalie. You just do. Even if it's not the ideal candidate in Jacob Markstrom, I don't care who it is, you give them league average goaltending for the final 20 games or whatever it is of the season. Because if you move on from Lindy, but you're not going to actually give your team what it needs, why even move on from Lindy at this point?
Well,
why do it?
That's it. And, you know, they're saying that they're not going to trade Tyler Toffoli, like, because they believe that they're going to make the playoffs. I think that's a bad decision. I think they should trade Tyler Toffoli. He's in the last year of his deal. I don't believe they're going to make the playoffs. He's 31. I mean, he's been really good. He's been a good player, and you know him, you know, watching the Kings for all those years. Tyler Toffoli, a good player. Yeah. But what's kind of funny is I think a place you could trade him is Vancouver, which would be funny because I think you could get more from the Canucks than what the Canucks got from Montreal when they traded Toffoli to the Canadiens. Mm-hmm.
I think they're trading Tyler Toffoli.
I think they are too.
I think Fitzgerald said all the right things in his media availability. I think you know, the fact that he said they're not shopping him is technically true. I think teams are calling about Tyler Toffoli, and if there's a deal that makes sense, I think you got to make the move, especially if they don't do anything over the next couple of days. And again, if you're not getting a goalie, none of it matters.
If
the Devils do not get a goalie, none of it matters, because they're not making the playoffs with their goaltending right now. They're just not.
No, and even if they do, they're not winning anything.
Yeah. Okay. So, anything else to say on Lindy?
I like Lindy. I'm sad it ended this way. I do think, like you, he probably hit his peak last year, his ceiling. You know, he's probably one of the greatest coaches in league history to not win a Stanley Cup. And it's a shame that this might be the last run he really had at it. But
sure,
he's a guy who's been a really good coach in the league for a long time. I mean, I remember those Sabres teams that he had back, you know, in the early part of the 2000s, and they were always competitive. And I just hate that it ended this way. I would have liked to have seen him go out on his terms.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Okay, so let's get to the Vancouver Canucks, the most interesting team in the National Hockey League. They truly are. Like, I'm not even kidding. This isn't like me trying to be funny or anything like that. I'm being legitimately serious. The Vancouver Canucks are the most entertaining, chaotic team in the league right now. And if you don't believe me, just look at what their last weekend looks like in the National Hockey League. The Vancouver Canucks, and we remember, like, you remember last week, early on in the week, we were talking about how Elias Pettersson, not sure if he wants to re-sign, kind of everything's up in the air, you don't really know what you want to do. There were rumblings that if Pettersson didn't kind of move in the right direction, that the Canucks would seriously consider trading him. And then, a couple of days later, what do we hear? All of a sudden, the Vancouver Canucks and Elias Pettersson, they're talking potential extension. Nothing done yet, but it's getting closer. And then, all of a sudden, over the weekend, Elias Pettersson signs on the dotted line, 8 years, $11.6 million AAV, a massive contract for Elias Pettersson. He stays with the Vancouver Canucks. And then there's rumblings that there was a legitimate trade offer on the table from the Carolina Hurricanes for Elias Pettersson. That there was an indication to the player that, hey, we got this trade offer. It's a pretty serious one. So think it over, or you might be a Carolina Hurricane. The deal comes together rather quickly. And again, it's interesting because it really felt like Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, they were trying to coax this along as best they could to get this deal done. Do you like that strategy from the front office?
I do. I like the bold move of basically going to Elias Pettersson and saying, it's either you sign with us or you go and play in Raleigh, North Carolina. Now, the Hurricanes, you look at their situation, and it would have been a great move for them because they have so much coming off the books next year that re-signing him to a huge deal would have been pretty easy, I think. But I like the strategy of saying it's either here or you pack all your stuff up and you move all the way across the continent to about as far away from Vancouver as you could possibly get. And I think he likes Vancouver. I mean, it's evident by the fact that he re-signed there. Because I do think looking at Carolina's cap situation, they probably could have given him more money. But I think he probably...
No. Hold on. They could have. They wouldn't have.
I think that's fair, too.
Yeah.
But I think... Listen, I've been to Raleigh. I've been to Vancouver. And yeah. In no way does my experience in both cities say what Elias Pettersson prefers, but I like Vancouver a lot. Like, it's a really, really cool city. So I would prefer to play there if it was me.
So they get Pettersson locked up. We don't have to hear about Elias Pettersson. Will he or won't he? He's going to be a Vancouver Canuck for the next 9 years. Good on him. But here's where Vancouver gets really interesting. Good friend of the show, Chris Johnston, tweeted out earlier today that the Canucks are considering moving Elias Lindholm to Boston to free up space to acquire Jake Guentzel.
I love it.
This is why the Vancouver Canucks are chaos. They make their big splash. They bring in Elias Lindholm 5 weeks ago from the Calgary Flames. Admittedly, Lindholm really hasn't gotten going. A couple of goals here and there. Nothing to write home about. I think he's got 5 goals in 14 games. It hasn't really worked the way that I think the Canucks expected it would. They've hit a bit of a snag. And so if you have the opportunity to bring a player home that you're incredibly familiar with, we all know that Jim Rutherford knows and thinks the world of Jake Guentzel. If you can use an asset that you got 5 weeks ago, flip it to a team that covets him, get something back in return, and then turn that into Jake Guentzel, give Patrick Alvin GM of the year right now. I would love that, Chapman.
Yeah, I like the boldness here as well. Look, I know this may upset some people, but I have a soft spot in my heart for the Vancouver Canucks because the two times they've made the Stanley Cup final in recent memory, they lost to two teams I grew up hating. I felt so bad, and I was so angry when they lost to the Rangers in 1994, and they had those great players like Trevor Linden and Pavel Bure. Kirk McLean played out of his mind leading up to that series with the Rangers. And I hated the Boston Bruins as a kid. I hated everything Boston. So I have a soft spot. So I want to see them make a run at this. And if you add Jake Guentzel by flipping Elias Lindholm, I mean, you got to love it. Just as a fan of the sport, you got to love the fact that this team's out there taking risks and really not caring what they have to do to try to compete. It's a nice change and a nice refresh from what we saw from the Vancouver Canucks just a couple of years ago.
I love it. I think it's amazing. Now, nothing's done yet, but if they're able to pull this off, I swear I would love every minute of it. More general managers, I feel like, have to take that type of aggressive approach. I really do believe that. Jason Zucker will miss the Coyotes game tonight for trade-related reasons.
Another friend of the show, Wenberg.
Yeah, for sure. Alex Wenberg also out of the lineup tonight, again, due to trade-related reasons. Do you have issue with that, like, at all?
No, I don't, because I think it says to the market, we value these players. We're not going to risk them getting injured. I think in the case of both Wenberg and Zucker, I think you want these guys to be traded. And if Zucker goes out tonight and he gets hurt, all of a sudden, if you're the Coyotes, you lose out. So you have to think about your future as well as the safety of the player. And, I mean, obviously it's admittedly a little bit selfish. But if I have no problem with that. Look, be selfish if you're the organization. Especially if you're the Golden Knights and maybe you want Alexander Wenberg, you probably don't want him playing.
No, you want a healthy player, period. And for Arizona, when it comes to Zucker, you got to do whatever you can to protect an asset that might go for something at the trade deadline. So I have no issue with it either. It protects the player, it protects the team, it protects the team that might trade for the player. And in essence, it gives you more reason to trade at the deadline. If you've got a bunch of injured guys, the trades are going to go down. And I want ultimate chaos, so I'm rooting for as many trades as possible. And the only way that you can do that is keeping players out for trade-related reasons. And then you start thinking about all the different players that are in and out of the lineup and whether or not those trades are imminent. This week is like Christmas morning 5 days in a row. It's amazing. I love it. I cannot wait. Trade deadline Friday. Buckle up. We've got a long way to go. Those are your one-timers for today, March 5th. It's a Tuesday, and if you want to see the Golden Knights on Saturday take on the Detroit Red Wings, be caller number 7-702-876-1340. You're a winner. Catching up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. Well, real quick, winner of those tickets was Joey Zamboni, longtime listener. First time he's called in a while, so he wins tickets.
Nice.
Grew up a Red Wings fan, so good on him. He said he hasn't missed a game yet, but what's kind of weird is, you know, 4 years ago was the COVID year. The Red Wings did not come and play at T-Mobile that year. I think they were the only team that did not play at T-Mobile that season, and then of course they didn't play them the following season, and it wasn't until 2 years later, and it was really late in the season, so there was a period where the Red Wings did not come to Vegas for almost 3 years, which is wild when you think about it. But they'll be here on Saturday, and Anthony Mantha gonna go up against his old team, so that should be interesting. Maybe his debut, which would be a bit ironic, but the funny thing is they came here really early year one, and every other year it seems like they come here much later in the season. But I always get excited when Detroit comes to town, just because of the history associated with that jersey and all the incredible players. And you think, even, you know, when we were kids, guys like Yzerman and, you know, Fedorov and all the great Russian players that they had, and of course Hasek. And then you look through the history of all the other great players that they had, and of course Gordie Howe pops off the list. But
buddy,
yeah,
I'm not going to stand for this Nick Lidstrom slander.
He's on there. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats.
He's on there. You're talking about Fedorov. You're talking about Yzerman. You're talking about Gordie Howe. Nick Lidstrom. Come on. Nicholas Cronwall, he could hit like a Mack truck.
By the way, that special that they had on ESPN with the Red Wings and the Avalanche was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. One of the best hockey documentaries I ever watched.
Good stuff. We'll be with you tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.